It's more for gathering information and discussion purposes. One thing for everybody to know is we're going to remove the 2.03 under current business. Discussion of prosecutor agreement, Randy Flick. He's become ill. So his secretary called and he had to go home sick, so he's not doing too well with here. So from there, we'll move on down to 2.01 under current business. Debbie, you want to come up?
Come on.
Tonight we're recognizing Debbie for 25 years of service to the city of Othello, and actually the community too. We've been involved in a lot of things over the years. And Debbie was hired as administrative secretary for the city in 1987. In 1988, she was promoted to the position of deputy clerk. In 1992, she was promoted to the position of city clerk by Ted Moskosh. In 1995, she received a designation as a certified municipal clerk of the International Institutes Municipal Clerks Association. As city clerk, her duties include official records clerk. She served on the civil service, secretary examiner. She administers the city L&I claims. She has registered notary and performs those duties for the city and other citizens. Supervises the deputy clerk, city clerk, and utility clerk. She was the treasurer of the Othello Centennial Committee and still works on those projects. She's a member of the Employee Safety Committee. Beyond that, I've worked with her for 9.5 years now, I believe it is. And it's always been a joy working with her. Whenever you need something, she tries to get it for me, or for anybody, even city council members I know, if you come in, she's always willing to help and get involved in things. And that's a big benefit for our community and for the city. And I'd like to really thank her for all of her duties for the last 5 years. Plaque here that says 25 years of service. Debbie, what's the last name?
Kurnah.
An appreciation of faithful service to the citizens of Othello, 1986 to 2011. I want to thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, 2.02, public hearing on NOAA Net Franchise Ordinance. Get that up here. All right. Please bear with us as we proceed through the legal and technical aspects of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7:04 p.m. and is being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments on the application for franchise. This public hearing is required by state law. The franchise has been developed and the city council has had the opportunity to review the draft. I will now ask the staff and requester to present their staff report. Eamon.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to do a brief introduction into the franchise, what it means, and what it's all about. And then Chris is here from NOAANet, and he can do a little presentation about NOAANet, what they do, and then we'll finish the public hearing process. NOAANet has requested from the city basically the use of our city right-of-ways to put in their cable lines to provide fiber optics to the city of Othello. The franchise explains how and where the lines will go, the duration and term of the franchise, which is 10 years. They had asked for 25, and that was actually a point of negotiations that we had with them. It was the feeling, my feeling and our city attorney feeling, that communications are changing so rapidly that to go beyond 10 years, We have no idea what the world's going to look like in 10 years relative to communication. So knowing that, has agreed to a 10-year term with the city of Othello. Also, there's bonding requirements in here that they've also agreed to. So with that, I'd like to introduce Chris and let him explain a little bit about knowing that. And Chris, I'm sorry, I forgot your last name.
Walker,
thank you.
Well, good evening. Again, my name is Chris Walker. I am the executive in charge of operations for KnowNet. KnowNet, the long name is Northwest Open Access Network. We were formed in 2000 by a consortium of the public utility districts in Washington State who wanted to build a broadband network to provide rural broadband services in communities that they serve. The intent back in the late 90s when this idea was first founded was to increase economic development in those counties in which the PUDs had presently served, continue to serve. There are 16 PUDs who are all considered owners of KnowNet, and at the beginning we essentially lit 1,100 miles of fiber optic infrastructure in the state of Washington. As you see on the map, and I can tell it's not too terribly easy to see, but the dotted green lines that start from Spokane, Washington, essentially, and head west is our current backbone network. That network is intended to provide middle mile broadband services throughout the state of Washington, primarily focused in rural communities in the state. We do have entrance facilities in Spokane, and Seattle, and Portland, for example, but that's because most people's data needs to get out into the rest of the world, and that's how you do that. We have presently infrastructure in 23 counties in the state of Washington, and sell a myriad of different broadband services throughout the state. We are a not-for-profit wholesale telecommunications network. Just as the PUDs are not-for-profit and owned by the citizens, we are not-for-profit and owned by the PUDs, and we follow that methodology. KnowNet does not have legislative authority to do anything other than wholesale operations, and so in every activity that we go into to provide broadband services, we will utilize a service provider either regionally or locally to provide that service to the end user. About 2 years ago, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act was formed, and within that were two programs. One was called BIP, and the other one was called BROADBAND, which stands for Broadband Technology Opportunity Program. And essentially, it was a funding mechanism for recipients of future grants to extend telecommunications networks in rural communities, focused entirely on providing broadband services in areas that were considered unserved or underserved by the census blocks. We put in a proposal for a BTOP funded project. In fact, we put in two proposals, and we were awarded both of them, and they total $140 million in grant monies, with a matching contribution from KnowNet totaling over $180 million. This network will construct, these two programs will construct 1,600 additional miles of fiber in the state of Washington to supplement our current network to extend broadband into rural communities. As you can see by the various colors on the map, we'll have red lines and we'll have blue lines depicting whether the infrastructure is aerial, which is blue, or buried, which is red. But essentially, we're building additional routes throughout the state of Washington in many rural communities throughout the state. This is now my 14th city council meeting, and it's just the beginning of what we're trying to accomplish. In every community that we're reaching, we have a mandate from the grant to serve certain types of what we're calling anchor institutions. And there's a fairly substantial list of those anchor institutions, and they include such agencies as libraries, hospitals, various public service agencies, schools, etc. And through this network, we'll be able to provide them essentially broadband services, which are defined as anything more than 64 kilobits of service. What we provide is anywhere from 10 meg to 100 meg to a gigabit of service. So it's quite a substantial increase in the capacity that these agencies will be able to enjoy in their towns. The one thing that's great about this network, that as we continue to build out and deploy, although we do have a mandate to serve anchor institutions, the opportunity to extend that to other public service agencies throughout local communities is available. We now are into the 15th month of a three-year program. As I said, there were two BTOP projects, BTOP 1 and BTOP 2. They started 6 months apart, so although we're 15 months into the first one, we're 6 months less into the second one. But essentially, we have 3 years to complete both of those construction projects, which is no small task. It's not easy spending $180 million, no matter how hard you want to try. So with this particular route, as you can see, we're by the letter E in EC5, and that route will extend down through where you see the SE1 south into Pasco. Presently, we have a co-location center in Pasco, which is our core network, or a portion of our core network. And so broadband services leaving the Fell would go to Pasco and then pass throughout the rest of the network to wherever those services need to be extended to. That's pretty much the overview. I can answer any questions that you may have. Expand anywhere you want.
So as far as, so it's an enclosed network, you don't go outside of the network if you're using it?
How do you mean?
Let's say we have somebody we use that's not part of your network. We would not be able to access that through your network, that person, or that business, or whatever it is. But
well, if they're not on the current fiber optic route, then there would have to be a line extension that would be constructed to deliver services to that entity that wouldn't be on the current route that you've probably already seen.
I'm thinking more like a telephone, you know, there's AT&T and these and these, but when you make a phone call, you just go through everybody's system.
You know what I mean? You know, if you pick up the phone and you call your grandmother in San Francisco, mm-hmm. when you do that, you are not just on Verizon.
Correct.
West. You're on multiple entities. We carry quite a substantial amount of telephone traffic in the state of Washington. With that said, we're not a provider of telephone services to you, the end user. When you make a phone call, your traffic will go to the central office that I believe is down here at the end of Main Street, and then another carrier will pick that up, take it to Seattle, for example, and so on, until it finally reaches destination. And we certainly could be part of that contiguous network, and you would never even know. And all things like that.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, through your network, you have access to all the other networks. You jump out. And...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, for no other network. To be successful, you have to be connected to just about everybody else.
Okay. Any other questions by council? Mark?
I need to get educated. You mentioned broadband service. How does that relate to fiber optics? Is that the same thing?
Technically, no. There's really two pieces of infrastructure that your services could be on. It could be the It could be the cable that's coming into your home or business. It could be the twisted pair, which is your telephone line, or it could be fiber. Fiber optics, the capabilities and the bandwidth that can go across the fiber optic network far exceed any copper or cable-based infrastructure. So it's higher capacity, and with the equipment that you put on the fiber optic infrastructure, that is really what makes it work. The glass is just a transport medium.
I didn't understand any of that.
Well, that was simple.
Will this mean there'll be another line on our telephone poles in town?
It does mean that.
And you mentioned you're wholesale only, and you'll go through a, quote, local service provider. Any example of who that might be in Othello? Is it the cable company that takes it over, or who's going to?
Well, typically cable companies utilize their own infrastructure. So really, depending on your internet service providers, for example, in this community, they could utilize the NOAA network to extend their infrastructure to whoever they may want to serve. So we give them an opportunity to what we call aggregate all the services within a town. So if an ISP has, say, 80 customers, they're really limited to how much service they can provide to the end user by how big the connection out of town is, how fast that connection is. And so the slower that connection is, then the slower the speeds are to the end user, the business or the resident. And so by having a larger circuit through KnowNet, then they should be able to expand their capabilities within the community. any one of your ISPs in town, as an example, could utilize Nomad. Any one of your smaller telephone companies could utilize Nomad as well to provide service.
So does that answer my question, why should I string another line through town when we already have fiber optics in Othello?
Well, the Nomad network is a little bit different than, say, a local fiber optic distribution network. One of the things about rural communities is there isn't that connection that leaves the community that goes elsewhere to other towns and so forth. So typically when you have a small town and you have a local fiber optic network, that really doesn't have infrastructure leaving the community. So we have the opportunity to extend that and deliver it elsewhere outside of Othello, or any town for that matter.
Doesn't our fiber optics leave town? Does anybody know?
More than likely, the central office, if you drive down the street down the main, you'll see big tower dishes, which is typically microwave. So most of your telephone traffic actually goes out via microwave system rather than fiber optics.
Hmm.
And it varies with every community. Some communities have more fiber optic infrastructure available than others. Most on our route do not have fiber whatsoever. One of the benefits of what we're doing is, take libraries for example, we'll be able to interconnect substantially every library in the state into one wide area network where every library will be able to communicate amongst each other. Same thing can be said to hospitals. And they'll be able to do that real time. And for hospitals, for example, that's huge. You can have a X-ray technician take an X-ray of one of their patients here in Othello, and within seconds it could be sitting in a doctor's office in Seattle examining it. You can't do that over telephone lines, for example.
If I don't like my current internet supplier, will this be an alternative eventually that I can hook up to this? Does it have anything to do with the internet, or am I just...
Well, the tough part to answer that question, knowing it as a wholesale provider, we are not able because of our authorities to sell to a residential user. So there is some limitations in a residential consumer's opportunity to buy better, faster, cheaper services from somebody else, because we don't have the authority to sell to them. It should, however, open up competition to enable other service providers to more cost effectively offer you services. We see that in many communities around the state where the opportunity of having a less expensive, more affordable broadband connection out of the state has increased competition and thereby increasing service, quality of service, cost, and service offerings.
Any other questions? Okay.
I get my glasses on.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Okay, we'll now ask for public testimony. Questions or objections to be heard from citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone and state your name and address for the record. I'll allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. Okay, since there was no public comments, I will now close the time for public testimony. Do any other council members have questions at this time? Okay, I will now close the public hearing at 7:20 p.m. Okay, thank you. All right. Okay, 2.04, since we're going to have to skip over discussion for prosecutor agreement because Randy's ill. Monthly investment report, Mike.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. I'm going to sit down here so I can kind of walk through this thing a little bit. This is my phone report that I'm doing for council to keep you updated on where the city's cash lies. And so I'll just go through this just a brief explanation. We do at end of the, this is actually, this report is actually a month behind all the time because I don't get the information at the first of the month so that I can do a report. When this report was produced, we had $823,851 in U.S. bank checking account. And then we have cash reserves invested in the local government investment pool. And the portfolio is U.S. Trust, which is a subsidiary of Bank of America. And then this month, I decided to include in the report a copy of our monthly treasurer's report that is right out of the bias accounting so that you can reconcile everything with the accounting system. And that's a safeguard, and I'm not saying this to be funny, but it really is a safeguard that I don't come in here and tell you stories that aren't true and give you a picture that you have money you don't have. And I think I talked about that some time ago. Where I did an audit for a city that had stolen $1 million, when in fact it was just a manipulation through the budget process. They were told they had money they didn't have, and they were spending it. And they got about $850,000 in the hole. And so this is a real protection, especially since we have the budget process coming up. During the budget process, when I say, well, at the end of this year we should have so much money, and then you need to get your antennas and you can go up. Say, oh, okay, let's see now. We've got this much in investment, we've got this and so on. And you can say, well, that sounds reasonable or it doesn't sound reasonable. And if it doesn't sound reasonable, and then you need to call me on it and we can discuss it. So it is a safeguard. Let's see. I want to go ahead. This is the our investments at the end of August. And this is the first one is the local government investment. And for July, it looks a little strange because we have, I show $1,543 in interest earnings at an interest rate of 0.156, and we have less money in the bank than we did in January. We made $826 at 0.2328%. And I'll tell you why that's true. The Washington State Investment Pool collects an administrative fee from us every month. It's a small amount, but at the end of the year, they go through everything to see what their real costs were. And then they, and if they find out their costs were lower than what they collected, they give a rebate. And in this particular month, I think we had about $800-some rebate. And I threw it in with the interest, because it's easier to distribute if I do that. And it stays in our investment account. So it acts like interest, but it just happens to be an administrative rebate. So, and then down here in the Bank of America investment portfolio, you see there's a large number of $52,500. And that would be just great if it was real interest, and it would be at 13.7%. If you can get that much on your money today, you'd be a miracle worker. But what this really was is portfolio managers sold those investments that we talked about that were not allowed by the state. And they sold them at a gain. And so that was nice for July. But from this point on, interest is going to be very flat. And it's not going to look anything like it has, because those were the high earners because they were riskier investments. But once again, they weren't allowed by the state. So it looks good right now, but from now on until the end of the year, and then even beyond that, it is going to flatten out. But I do have to appreciate our portfolio manager and the work she's doing, and I know you met her. I know that she'll always be looking for opportunities to get better earnings on her money. That's kind of where it stands right now. And I'm just going to really show briefly this is the report out of a bias This is the last page of the report, and it's actually the last page of the report in the two right-hand columns. You can see the cash, available cash. There is the $823,851 that I talked about in the agenda memo. And then here's the total investment balance of $7,365,774. So you can check my numbers against these numbers out of the accounting. So that basically is my report. Are there any questions?
Did we get that straightened out where we had investments in some programs that weren't within our policy? Is that
yes,
all?
We are. Okay. We are back to being very busy.
Any other questions for Mike? Okay, thank you, Mike. Okay, committee reports. Do we have any committees that have met? All right, unfinished business. New business. Okay.
I don't know if this old business, new business, what? I would like to have an update on our 14th Street closure. I think this is the old time process to do this time of year. And we got a fair that's in the process the next week, and also this week there's a lot of activity back and forth. And I think we should put some pressure on the school district, contractor, whatever, to get the job done so we can get the street open. And I would say that thing ought to be opened up in the next 2 days. I'm not going to wait till Friday or Monday or whatever. It should have been done. It's my understanding that it had a 2 week period supposedly to do this. They said it would take possibly 3 days. And I think we've been 3 days into that through Friday plus the weekend. That's 6 days, another day of the day. I think it's time to put some pressure to get that street open.
That is being done. What is happening is they're having a lot of sloughing. They're having a lot of trouble keeping the ditches open. And they have been told by Monday morning?
Well, if I could comment,
yeah.
Mr. Mayor.
Well, you met with them again today, didn't you? That's right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mr. Kerr, thank you for bringing it up and coming in today and talking about it. As you know, let me back up in time a little bit. The school district needed to cut the street to get the sewer in, and that's basically what they're doing. They did come in and get a street excavation permit that has a 14-day window. There was no start date on the permit because the contractor did not know when he was going to start. Unbeknownst to either the school district or the city, contractor closed the street last Wednesday, I think it was, and cut the street. I immediately called the school district and said, you know, what's going on? And they said, we don't know. We don't know if the street was closed. Why don't we meet this afternoon at 3:30? So the school district and the city, we all met at 3:30 last Wednesday. It was discovered then that the contractor, on his own volition, decided to close the street and not notify anybody. So the school district did not know that their own contractor had closed the street or cut the street. So the school district and the city got together, contractor was there, and we said, okay, explain it to us, what's going on? And he said, no big deal, I'll have it done in 3 days. And that's what Mr. Cater was referring to. The 3 days was up Friday, and it's not done. The reason it's not done is because if you drive out there, you'll see that the hole that they're digging to connect keeps getting bigger and bigger because the road is sloughing in. Every time they take a scoop out, two sides fall in. So it's gotten wider and wider, and they're to the fog lines now on the side of the roads. So that is why it's not complete. So Mr. Kaler and I talked this morning, and when he was in my office, I called the school district, asked for an update when the project was going to be done, because fair is next week. At the meeting last Wednesday, we also told them, actually Assistant Chief Inks told them that we have the fair coming up, you got to get the street fixed. And the contractor at that time again said, no problem, 3 days, it'll be done. Well, we're past that. So this morning when I called Ms. Bullis, should I talk? She was going to meet with Mike Curry in 30 minutes and then call us and let us know. 4:45 tonight, they still had not called, so I called Mike Curry, and he said, oh, it'll be 2 weeks. I said, no, it won't. We're meeting at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. So we were going to meet at 11 o'clock. We're going to review what's been done, and I posed some options to Mike, and he said, well, we could put a slurry seal down the middle and open up a fairway. I said, one good option. We're going to explore some more. So tomorrow after our 11 o'clock meeting, I should be able to notify you by email on what the decision was and what's going to happen the next week. That's as of 4:30 tonight. It was amazing to me that the school didn't even know their contractor closed the street and cut the street. And his answer was actually pretty good. He had, on his schedule, he had finished what he was going to do before he cut the street, so he just moved right into it. But he didn't tell anyone.
That brings me to a question, is how does that permit process work when we have contractors that want to make cuts in the streets? Are we required to have a start and finish date on that permit?
Yeah, and I have not seen that. I did ask to see it tomorrow morning, so I'll have it before the 11 o'clock meeting. I was just told that there was no start date. I don't know that for sure. I know it's a 14-day permit, so I'm going to go count the days. It may be Monday, the 12th. It may be the 14th when those 14 days end. I'm not sure yet because I haven't seen it, but I'll know tomorrow. But I agree with you, Mr. Cater. We got to get the street open for the fair.
Well, on top of that, if this is the way they're going to do that whole school system, we got to get on top of it now and not let it happen and continue on down the road. Because we're going to have the same problem out through the whole operation.
We have an engineer inspector out there, David.
You jump on them. You don't just let them happen. I mean, I've been one. I know what you can do and what you can do. And this just ticks me off to have that street blocked for the fair. We went our Sand Hill Crane Festival. We went to the county, broke our butt so we could get the fairs open so we could have them for our campground out there. Now here, what are we doing? We're doing the reverse. We're closing the street when it's the most active time of the year. And it gives us as a city a black eye. It's not the school district that's going to get the flack, it's us and us councilmen sitting right here. And that's just not the way to go.
You're right, who's going to get the flack, but it is the school district that's closing the street. It's their project. And as we talk today, we want to make sure the public knows that. But after 11 tomorrow, hopefully we'll have a good direction.
They have to build a temporary road around if they get the damn thing opened up.
That's another option I explored with Mike. It's called a spur, and we talked about building a spur around. So there are some options.
I had a discussion with somebody the other day that when they closed the street down here, they didn't bother to put any road closed signs down on the highway.
Right.
So all these people coming through and gonna whip up 14th and gun it. So they're doing U-turns out there in the highway and out in the fields and stuff like that so they can get back into town going the other way. And you know, that's just, he put up his sign, but he didn't bother to take care of the rest of it.
He said his signs are up last Wednesday. That was one of the questions we asked him.
As far as the stop signs go, last week, since school started, the bus has been going up Catawba and around back into the thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed today they went up around and then they came out of the parking lot and went back around the other way, so they don't have to cross, make the corner into 14th from Cemetery Road. They came back up Cemetery and around, so that's not a bad deal either.
No, but that is not in their traffic plan that they submitted.
No.
But you're right, that's an alteration that benefits everybody.
Yeah. That worked out pretty well. So,
yeah. Any other new business?
I have my list of things to like to discuss and get updated on, and if we can't answer it tonight, maybe have it on the next agenda for the council meeting. In no particular order, well number six It was my impression we were going to run that for 30 days, see if the fluoride was back flushed, keep checking it, see if we'd wash the fluoride out. It started rumbling, so they shut it down. So now we don't know if it's defective or if it's got high fluoride or we can flush it out because it's just sitting there. So what are we, what's our status and plan for well number six?
Yeah, we will have that next week. We will have a further analysis of what's going on there. However, fluorides have been dropping. I can tell you that. I think I sent that email around.
Is it running even?
Pardon me?
Is it running?
No, and that's because of DOH.
So they found out we were going to run it for 30 days and shut us down?
Well, no, they said, if you recall, you asked Mr. Julius that, and he said we could run it.
Right.
That was not accurate. The next day, we found out that we couldn't, because I wanted to make sure that we could, and we couldn't. We could only run it the same basis we've been able to run it for the past 7-8 years, on an emergency basis, as needed, and we can flush it and test it. That's all. We can't run it continuously.
That's bad, because we'll never know now unless we have an emergency and have to run it. And then if it shakes itself to death because it wasn't working right, the warranty will be expired, and then we'll be back to ground zero.
We should know this week about the vibration.
Okay. My basketball buddies are noticing it's getting dark faster. I wonder when we're going to get lights on that second court. They said they were going to use ball field lights for that. I haven't seen any progress. So I'd like to bring that up on the radar screen again.
I'll have to look into that.
Main Street. When they first started talking about the bumps in the road, I wasn't one very vocal about that because I didn't think it was that big a deal. But the latest in driving my car through down Main Street, like especially out in front of City Hall, it actually chatters my wheels. And it was expected to be close to 100 this week. Are they coming in to back roll, or are we just done on that?
No, we're not done. They have been asked to do that. They MRM has reported that the bumps, the ripples at CBHA through car traffic have minimized. The ones at City Hall have not. We're in discussion with them to have them come up. You're right, it's 90 plus all week. We don't have a firm date, and we are not paying the final paycheck either, the final pay request.
That's what
but
I wanted
Larry,
to hear.
Larry will be here. Thank you. Larry will be here next Monday to explain that.
Okay, because there's retainage, too.
Yeah, we have both.
Yeah, and I'll be dipped if I'm going to accept that project. So
we have both.
I'm asking the city manager and the mayor and the council to support me. I'm begging to get that street sweeper out. I went on a bike ride and the roads are just terrible. There's gravel all up and down next to the gutters and grasses and dirt, and we're kind of getting a gritty town, and we have this $250,000 street sweeper, and I sure would like to get that out. I mean, drive down Main Street and see where the cars park.
It was out this morning.
I saw them driving around, but I didn't see the brushes down.
It's out and in use.
Yes.
Okay, well, it, yeah.
What I'd like to do is just give you a sweeper plan on where it's going to be working, what it has done, and what it's going to do.
And the only thing I would recommend, first I'd recommend you do it more often because it's got beyond what it should be now. And second of all, we need to reschedule somebody. Like they go by the schools at 10 o'clock, where everybody's parked there on the street. They need to come by the schools at 5 or 6 in the morning. So I don't know how you exactly plan everything, because other places, people are parked there at that time, you know, residents, and they leave for work. But we need to tweak somebody's schedule so they can go early, especially around the schools. And they are better. I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of construction here, but now it's time to start cleaning up. Construction's winding down. So I would like to see the street sweeper out more often. And
not on Garbage Day.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Because everybody has,
street,
yeah.
Around the garbage cans.
Yeah.
My next item is the walking path. And especially with the school district, It looks like they've completed a well around Scutney, but I'm still not seeing the, on the west side of 10th Street, there's supposed to be a handicap access
yep.
thing there. And it, supposedly they had a meeting specifically to address this. Have they sent you a letter with plans and deadlines or?
We don't have a recent letter. We still have the plan that George Ward has agreed to, which you're referring to, with the handicapped on the other side. And they have not said no, they're not going to do it. We keep reminding them, and we kind of get put off because of other things in their projects that are going on for some reason.
Like shutting streets down?
The projects are done, they'll have it done.
Well, maybe if they quit shutting down streets, they have time to do it, but that's Ken's issue, so. But yeah, there's also supposed to be signage too, as that came into McFarland bus route there that
yes.
says go over to the sidewalk, and I mean they were right here, and we said that means people are going to be walking on your school property. So, next item, when I got here in 1978 until about a month ago, behind the fire station on Broadway was a water stand, overhead water stand. And that disappeared. First of all, was I as a council member advised of that at all? And second of all, what's the alternative for business and industry and contractors to get water?
In 2002, if you'll recall, the council discussed that. What the council wanted at the time.
What year?
2002. And I can tell you it was February.
Okay.
It was my very first meeting. I remember it.
I can't remember last month, but go ahead.
The council asked that something be done relative to the standpipe to monitor and meter the water usage. Okay. Nothing was done. We kicked around an idea, I think twice, and we came up with, I think it was $12,000 to put a card lock system on that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it wasn't last year, it was the year before we talked about it in the budget. Terry is currently working on it. Because of the volume of water that the city has lost because of the standpipe, and we know that now because of the contractors coming in saying, where to go, what happened? So we had unaccounted water that Department of Health said we had to account for. And the only way to do that was to remove it. Now to your second question, we have an option. We've notified all the contractors. They check out a backflow device from Public Works and go to any hydrant they want, and that's the way it's legally done. They pay a deposit for it, which they weren't required to do before. We lost several backflow devices, and I can't remember how much they cost. Do you remember, Gina? Like $1,100?
Yeah, several.
Yeah, we lost several of those, but now we have a deposit system. They come and they pay for the water that they use, as opposed to the old standpipe system, which was free water to everybody. We had a guy with a tanker truck two or three times a week coming in, filling it up, not paying. If you'll notice, there's a sign up there that says, please go to City Hall, get a bulk rate permit before you pump water. Mm-hmm. Nobody did that. So that's the alternative. And the chief and I are working out, fire chief, how to do water on the wash rack.
On the what?
On the wash rack, to wash the vehicles, wash the fire trucks.
Well, if they come in and get a backflow device, does that include a meter?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So when they hook up to a hydrant, it's going through the backflow device and a meter.
Right.
And we take the beginning and ending reading
yep.
and charge them accordingly.
Yep, exactly.
So I guess maybe under the thing of continuous improvement between the street closure on 14th and that's something I would appreciate being communicated to me somehow. Because it would just kind of, it puts us in a bad light when they come up and ask, where's the standpipe and how do I get water? And I'm like clueless as that it's even gone. I'm done. It's still early, so.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's harsh on this one. It wasn't the other one, but I know we got a ADA access to our front doors out here. And I understand that's out for contract, along with painting and whatnot. Is that going to include the striping on our parking lot out here?
No, it did not include striping.
We need to get our parking lot striped out here. It's pretty vague out there where the stripes are at. It just doesn't look good in our city hall when you've got a almost a gravel parking lot out here, it looks like it. I think we need to look bright stripes out there just like we have on Main Street. So I think that should be done yet this fall.
The Public Works crew has a striper machine. It's a aerosol can machine that you walk that they do that well, so we can do that.
I didn't know whether it was going to do it with the paint part of that or not. It's actually street funds. So.
The bids on the painting came in, I think it was $6,000 low. So if you don't mind, we could include it in there if the contractor does that work. Because we are maxed out with Public Works crew, summer and mowing and everything that they're doing. And we could do that. There's room in that budget.
It's fine with everybody?
Yeah,
I don't see anybody objecting.
I think we had a bid for our church and it seems horribly expensive, but they do it right. That's the right paint and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, whether the street crew does it or whether you hire the painter or whichever.
Okay, we'll get it done.
And I noticed we finally got the census reports out, the numbers. I was really impressed to see how much the fellow has grown in population actually in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
We're up to 7420. And that's, you know, our old signs are still saying 64. And those were just updated, it just seems like here less than 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that long ago.
I'm not sure if Terry's got the signs ordered or not. We'll check on that.
It's really nice to see that rate of growth is growing by that.
As long as you mentioned the growth, a lot of formulas, revenue formulas that we get money for the city are based on the population. So this is really going to help us on the revenue side of our budget this year.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
Maybe you could check on this, but for sound with our industry, we have two noises citizens are talking to me about. One behind the fire station on the railroad track is somebody has grain rail cars, and in order to get them unloaded, they have a vibrator on them. And it's like bam, 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 bam. And I can hear it up at my house when it's right. And I don't know what noise ordinances apply to industry, but there should be some consideration. The other one.
This is behind the fire station?
Yeah, on the railroad tracks back there. The other one is somebody, either Simplot or McCain's or. What's the fertilizer place there? Wilbur Ellis has a propane bird cannon. And it goes off. It was going off every 20 seconds this morning.
And that's Simplot.
I think it's McCain.
I think we're told Simplot. I called them on it.
Oh, did you?
And they said, yeah, we know the guy that's responsible for that. We'll talk to him, but I don't think it happened evidently.
They need to point it the other way or something.
You're not talking about that plume that comes up.
They have them back there to keep the birds and stuff out that they're having troubles with. Because I talked with them about that.
Do you hear it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, especially at 10 o'clock at night. I mean, that's ridiculous. They don't need. Does Mr. Rooney, do the police officers hear that? Do you know where it's at?
It's behind it. Okay. It's behind Simplot.
We need to have them point it.
I live on 4th Avenue, and it's woken up my children.
Yeah. This morning, it was like, conditions get just right, and our bedroom window faces east, and somehow it echoes off your house and into my window. And
I get it, too.
It's terrible. You know, every 20 seconds, they must have. It's got a timer. I probably bought the thing, but. Yeah. But it needs to have them point that or see what kind of noise restrictions apply to industry because both those are, to me, are becoming a nuisance.
Yep.
How about the green arrow at 14th? Right turn green arrow.
What about it?
Did Terry ever get back to you on that?
Yeah, there's no issue. It's in the right-hand turn lane as you're going. Be going east.
But you got people turning left, and you got a green arrow at the same time. that's an issue to me.
No, it's in the, it, as you're going east, it's in the right-hand turn lane where you can turn,
right.
You get a free right
turn.
But if you're
coming from Walmart heading west and you turn onto 14th Street, you're turning there and this person is allowed to turn into you because he's got a green arrow.
It's only green when it's green up on top of the pole.
Exactly.
But they
and
have to yield.
For this guy too.
There's a sign up though that says
yeah, it
that.
Says, you have to give.
Left turn must yield.
Yeah, left turn has to yield. It says
yeah,
it right up on the.
I believe there's a sign up there that says that. Left turn has to yield.
We have a right turn arrow.
Yes.
Yes.
Green. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if this person's already turning and this guy's coming, he can hit him because he's got a green arrow. This guy's already been turning before this other guy even gets there, but he's got a green arrow.
No,
we'll look at it
tomorrow. Okay, we'll look at it again, but it's only green when that light is green above it.
Yeah,
so.
But
the light's green
yeah.
coming
the other
coming
way.
West.
Yeah.
The light
so
has a green light to turn left,
the
guy has a green light to turn right.
There is a sign up there that says,
yeah.
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 Left hand turn has to yield. Yeah.
Yield to cross.
But if you're already in your turn and this guy's coming, he can turn because it's green. So
left turn yield is a pretty normal thing in most towns.
Free right turn, but
you have to. But you have to read that. No.
Y'all, if you're coming from Walmart to that intersection, there's somebody that cuts over into the right-hand lane. If you're smart, you wait until they get around the corner because you never know. I mean, they've got a green arrow; they're going to go. Right turn goes first, and so if you get halfway out there, you better look out because you're going to get hung up, and it is a problem. There is some problem there, and I don't know how you, what you do about it unless you close off that right turn arrow and leave the left turn arrow on the other side.
Then it's like every other.
But then they have to stop.
Yeah, but it is like every other intersection. On if you visualize on 4th, if somebody's coming up and wants to turn up Main and wants to turn right onto 4th and it's a green light, he still has the right of way to turn right on that.
Correct.
And the guy turning left, I guess, has to yield. I never thought of that before, but it's.
Then we'll look at it again. But
since we're in traffic, can I bring something else up really quick?
Oh, yeah.
And I believe Eamon was missed the last meeting when we had the gentleman from the state here on Highway 26. And I know we went back to look at some further options, and I believe it's probably thoroughly. Not irritated, but frustrated when he left here because there was a lot of good public input. I thought of really a lot of good public input. Mm-hmm. And after that meeting that night and looking at the situation too, I thoroughly believe that a lower speed limit would be the most practical, cheapest. I know he was after the state funds because there was a grant there. Mm-hmm. But if stoplights were threw up there, I know one of the options were stoplights. It would be costly. But then I looked at the traffic this weekend. And if we had a stoplight up there, we would have had a traffic blocked up to 14th or past at times. And I know a stoplight won't work. But I believe that we really need to look at a lower speed limit on that intersection. And that's what I would greatly support at that intersection right now, is a lower speed limit.
Could I add to that?
Yeah, we can try that, but council wasn't the council we tried before, and they would not budge.
Yeah.
They just would not do it. But
DOT will be here October 3rd at our next workshop, and we'll go over that. We will receive an interim letter that says two things. First, it will say that a stoplight will not work there. And that was from the minutes of the meeting, is where I went from the council's discussion, was to get a stop, a signal. They're going to say it won't work. The second thing that they were going to tell us is that if they find additional funding, then the city is basically out of the picture relative to saying yes or no, we approve it. They get additional funding, they can do whatever they want. And that's the position they're going to take.
Yeah, I went down and took a look at that one business that would be greatly impacted. And it would shut off basically almost both their driveways in and out of their business. They would have no access to it.
Effectively killing one of our major inroads into the town.
However, looking at that south driveway of that business at the corner, was that a Chevron station? That exit probably should have never been in the first place. That is dangerously close to Highway 26. I didn't realize it before, but it's like you come out in one car lane, yes, you're on Highway 26. So yeah, yes, it would.
That exit's been there before you were here.
Yeah, it's been there a long time.
That's why now you can't do that. You've got to be 300 feet.
That's right.
Was that right? Yeah.
And I've seen the lower speed limit in through many different communities.
Okay.
And Highway 18 is a great example of that.
Perhaps
I was
going to
say Highway 18 is a great example of having a light in an area like that, because Highway 18, there's area I know, because my parents used to travel that all the time. My parents lived up that way. And there are all kinds of areas that you're coming around corners where you can't see, and there's light, and they've just got the big flashing warning signals and everything else. So they can't say that there's no
no other place that does
that. That does that.
Yeah, I travel 18 miles, you know, but maybe the exploration of the speed limit.
It is
the right way to go, I don't know, but we are going to get a letter probably this week that says stop light, stop signal will not work.
I think we need to push it very hard as far as what we want, not what they want. Because then it's run out of the top of the close and we'll be without it.
They get that additional money, and you and I know that's what they're going to do.
Yes, but it was interesting, Amy, you weren't here. To me, it was always a DOT project, but when there was opposition, the first thing the guy said when he stepped up there was that it's now in the city of an Othello project. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Now, I think Dan and Ken and I talked about that. That's exactly what they were going to do, is say it's a city project. Well, it's a city project only because we tied on their coattails to get the funding that they got. They do the reporting as I did today. They owe the state the reports on the funding expenditures, not the city. So it is their project. They designed it.
When the business owners were here, I was kind of defending DOT, kind of stirring up the pot. And in hindsight, it is a bad intersection. And my heart, you know, I want to make a change. But in my head, after looking at it and seeing it, I don't know that anything they propose is going to be any better. And I talked to a couple of the council members. I'm to the point where you just got to slow it down.
Yeah.
They say it causes rear-end collisions, but I don't believe it. If you put enough signage up and just require it, and that becomes the status.
Far enough in advance.
Yeah.
Did you come over?
And the flashing light or whatever you need, but all that other stuff. I want it to be better, but I don't know that it will. It might be more chaos.
We'll talk about it again.
It just seems to me that, I've talked to people in California, and I've talked to people in Hawaii, and I've talked to people, in cruise ship stuff. Oh yeah, I know where Othello is. Used to go by there going to Pullman.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, they put that thing in, it's going to be worse than that, because they're just going to keep going.
Yeah.
No, and if it's a problem to get into town, the next time they come, zip, they'll just plan to be on down the road. So we'll end up with one major entrance to town, which would be 14th, or up here. And then, it just seems to me what's going to happen is kind of what happened to small towns when they put in the interstate. They put in a thing that said, city access, get off on Thacker Road, go up through, and then you can come back on and you get the highway down there and you can get back on. So we'll be off the main track, pretty basically, and slow them down.
That's my opinion too, because like you say, on the interstate, that's to deliver traffic and vehicles or whatever. State highways were designed from city to city, not basically just to deliver traffic, and that's exactly what they're trying to do here, make a basically a freeway out of 26, so it bypasses no problem. And I think that we need to push it hard, because they're gonna run right over the top of us. I know the worst about it. So we need to make our stand and say, hey, no guys, it ain't gonna happen.
Disaster city for those people down
there. We need to protect our business people.
See, I could defend a couple of restrictions if I thought it would help and maybe it cuts business, but people every day seem to find their way into McDonald's and back out to the highways. So, you know, if it's a little more cumbersome, but it just, looking at the whole thing, it just doesn't make sense to me anymore. It's just too much. People are going to be so confused, they're not even, they're going to be doing U-turns and turning the wrong way and everything else.
Good. We're all ready for a fight, yes. Any other new business? Okay, we'll also, council will also receive the following department heads' reports for July. And for mayor announcements, the next mayor's luncheon normally scheduled for the second Wednesday of the month has been moved to September 21st to adjust to conflict with the fair. This month also happens to be quarterly Adams County Mayor's Luncheon, so we've invited Todd O'Brien, Adams County Public Works Director, to be the featured speaker. Everybody's welcome to come to that. It's 12 o'clock at the Senior Citizen Center, September 21st. And then also the pool committee meeting to close out the 2011 season will be on Thursday, September 15th at 1:30 in Room 3 at City Hall. That's Council Members Score, Doro, and Johnson. Mayor, we still have that?
Were we going to try to change that? Because
We talked about that.
Yeah, there's a problem with Thursday. Could we bump it a week? Is that okay with the committee?
22nd work for everybody?
Yeah, it would be fine for me.
And not just, not the 17th or whatever it was.
15th, yeah.
But we'll send out an email.
Okay. Okay, so the 22nd then for everybody? Good. We'll do that. Other than that, is that everything council has? Good.